Yes, this is Roberto Gonzalez. You are back with another Steambox podcast. Today, I'm with my Highlander high school homies. Highlander, please unmute your microphones and say what's up.
What's up? Yeah.
Yo.
What's up?
Hi.
Billy, you got called out recently for always waiting to the end and then being like, hi. I appreciate all of y'all. It is you who are making Steambox what it is, right? Like, and I've gotten some like awards and awkward things that I put in the corner, but people don't know it's y'all. You are the ones. It's that energy. That's why this podcast, once again, this week, closed out the week, number one in the world. I want to give a shout out to a local hip hop legend, Chachi, for joining us on our Love and Hip Hop series. But it's your questions. Like, y'all have some dope questions and a dope conversation with Chachi. Today, our guest is a legend. Like, I don't think people understand, right? Like, y'all got your playlists that you do different things to. And before it was even in my world that Steambox could meet Samus, Samus was in my Rocket League playlist, and I'm listening to Samus every day when I play video games. And now here is that legend on our podcast. Samus, what's up?
Hi, wow. First, congratulations on just ascending so high with this project. I mean, I used to, back when touring was a thing, podcasts really saved my life, you know, just long hours on the road and, you know, trying to stay awake and stay inspired. So it's really cool to hear that this conversation is being heard by so many folks. So congratulations to y'all. I hope you get a chance to celebrate and really pat yourselves on the back. It's not a small accomplishment to produce something like this.
They don't know this, but I actually do have an idea in mind for a way that they and I can all celebrate together. And we're going to work on that in the coming weeks. Can you tell me more about how podcasting saved your life? Like, what is that? It sounds like a metaphor. What do you mean?
Well, there's two kind of branches of that. The first is I started podcasting actually in 2016 with my husband, then my boyfriend. And we put this podcast up on Patreon. It's called the Zero Suits Podcast Situation. And we actually just took a little hiatus, but we put it up on Patreon and people started contributing. It's kind of this crowdfunding site where folks are able to give you like $1 or $5 if they just support what you're into. And the money that we were able to make from that podcast allowed us to be able to move to Philly. And Philly has been a really important place for me as an artist. I'm in close proximity to all these different cities. Touring wise, it's been amazing. There's a great art scene here. So really, podcasting literally saved my life and helped my career to grow. But also, like I was saying, just as a touring artist, you're always trying to like listen in, figure out what's going on in the world. And you don't have those opportunities because life can be so busy. You got to get to the venue, you perform, you go home, you're on the road the next day. It's just this crazy cycle. So podcasts, listening to podcasts with like my bandmates and other people I'm on tour with has been a really nice space to like slow down and take.
Billy is like the soul of hip hop, right? Like that's where the roots come from, right? Yeah. That's where Jilly comes from, right?
That's
Jilly
where Mega Ran comes from.
that's where Mega Ran comes from. I'm learning because I'm reading Mega Ran's book. Mega Ran, another friend of Steambox. Shout out to Raheem. You want to tell us how you met? Hold up. I'm sorry. I wanted to go down the rabbit hole. But I have prepared just two questions before I kick it over to the students. I don't want to jump off. I apologize. Let me just quickly point out something that we were talking about offline that I wanted to save for this conversation. I think it's important that the world know that another friend, and I am building a secret society of y'all to represent Steambox, but another friend of Steambox is Marvel writer Vida Ayala.
Yeah.
Vida Ayala is crazy dope. Yes. And Vida Ayala, as a non-binary Afro-Latina from New York, or Afro-Latinx from New York, talked on our podcast about how representation is important. Mm-hmm. And that's a common theme that comes up all the time with Steambox, who are talking about how important it is that they have some teachers and mentors and role models who look like them. Mm-hmm. And you know what we didn't have, and this is why you were in my playlist. Mm-hmm. What we didn't have was Black girls talking about video games, Black girls talking about, or not accessible anyway. We didn't have in a way that we can, that was common enough for us to find that easily. And that's why you spoke to me, and that's why you speak to so many of my Steambox students. Representation is important. I think that's so dope. I want to say thank you, but I also want to bring it back to one of your lyrics and ask you how this has affected you. At one point in one of your songs, you say, don't enunciate or you're an Oreo, right?
Yeah.
That's so important because Steambox, we have so many nerds, right? And we've all heard, I, as a light-skinned Latino, have heard that I'm too white. And mm-hmm. so many times we've heard because the way we talk that we're not black enough or that we sound white. Can you tell me about that line, don't enunciate or you're an Oreo?
Yeah, so that line comes from a song called Mighty Morphing, which I wrote in response to several conversations that I was having with a lot of my kind of black woman friends, just about all of the boxes that we found ourselves trapped within, right? Like all of the labels that people associated or ascribed to us and all of the complexity that was being left on the table. Like if you just meet any one of us on the surface, there's any number of ideas you might have about who we are, what our values. You might not know some of them are hardcore gamers, but from just like your one interaction with them on the street, but there's so much that gets left on the table, particularly in popular media, right? Where often there is a black character and so they have to play this role, right? So for me, I was reflecting on my experiences of being a kid and I found that the stuff that I loved and liked and gravitated towards the media and the way that it reflected in my person, like how I dressed or what I talked about, how I spoke, it was reduced into this, you know, this stereotype of the Oreo where you're white on the inside. And it was like, no, I'm black as hell. Like I'm not, you know, because I like this stuff that doesn't actually negate any of the blackness of who I am and what I value. It's just an aesthetic or a storyline that I'm drawn to. And so I wanted to highlight that particular pain for me, but it's, I love that you highlighted that because I've learned from my own music, like sharing my story, how many other Black folks, people of color have these similar experiences. Like I can't tell you how many people after shows have been like, where have you been all my life? You just spoke my story into existence. All of these kind of horror stories of being told I was this thing when I knew I was so much more.
Yo, that's so real. Like so many people feel like they have to, again, if I go back to mutual friend, Megaran, right? Shout out to Megaran. In the book, he talks about a loss that he had. Somebody was murdered in his family because mm-hmm. people wanted to be hard to build up their reputation to become rappers, right? Like, so the idea is if I want to be a successful MC, mm-hmm. I have to be hardcore. I have to like lay down bodies, all of this stuff. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. here you are putting out tracks. First of all, here you are as a woman when it's already, when the game, and this is something that the crew has talked about a little bit, when the game has sometimes had negative connotations towards women, right? Like not only breaking through, but, and shout out to all the people who've done it before, MC Light, yeah. all these people, like I could go on and on. But not only have you broken through, but you're breaking through and you're taking us with you, right? Like it's not a, I have to be hardcore. The track is called Mighty Morphin, obviously like in response to like Power Rangers, right? And you talk about how like you're an Oreo if you talk like this, or that's the perception.
Right.
That's where Steambox's love for you comes from. So that's wow. what we want to say thank you for. Yanhel, you're up first with the questions. Yanhel, go for it.
What do you feel about when people listen to a song, they call it gay, like as a negative, you know, saying like, oh, that's gay.
I mean, that frustrates me endlessly. You know, we're in 2020 and my hope would be at this moment that the range of different ways that human beings can exist would find love. And it's not to say that everybody has to have the same taste, right? But leveraging somebody's identity as like a weapon, that to me is a huge problem. So it's something that I hope will continue to shift and will continue to change. And it happens from artists taking up space. Like anytime an artist produces something or makes something and they reflect a narrative that's not the mainstream narrative, that creates like a new space of possibility. So queer rappers, LGBTQ rappers, you know, nerdy, geeky rappers, rappers who are coming in from all of these different spaces, that's creating a space for us to question some of those like things that we take as norms, just like, oh yeah, that's, you know, using that as a slur or a way of insulting something, you start to question those default assumptions once you start meeting and listening to people who are coming from those communities. So thanks for that question.
Yo, thank you for that question. I think that's really important. We had deep conversations when we were talking about what kind of questions we wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I brought up, we started talking about the culture and I started talking about how Camp Low, like I love that sound mm-hmm. that Camp mm-hmm. Low has. Like I love that sound and sparkle, mm-hmm. but like sometimes there'll be some lyrics that just hit me so gross.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like hit me so gross. Like I could love the song. And then like they have a line that says undercover F word for gay people, lovers. And it just is so gross to me, but yet I still love that track. And I'm trying to wonder like what that says about me. Which brings me to Jada, hang on for just a minute. I'm gonna go to Sabdiel next. Cause I think this is stuff that we were talking about. Jada, I'm gonna go to you right after Sabdiel. Sabdiel, what's your question?
Yeah, me and Roberto, we had a little chat about this. I don't know, I'm sorry if this is kind of offensive or not, mm-hmm. but I have it written down here. So me and Roberto were talking about Black culture and the hip hop, you know, community and stuff like that. And my question to you is that certain words that the hip hop artists say, you know, fag and the N word, you think it was the byproduct of their time, or do you think it speaks truth to, you know, what the Black community speaks of, you know, in the game?
Okay. So thank you for the question. And it's a challenging one, right? Because I think we are in a moment where we're really starting to question some of the, I shouldn't say we're in a moment. I think every generation looks back and asks, why did we do this, right? As there are more conversations and there's more space for progressive conversations in particular, I think we're able to look back with a critical eye and say, this was wrong, right? Or this should have happened. I remember recently on Twitter, there was kind of America's Next Top Model. Like every periodically old shows, like clips from shows that used to air will kind of float back into public consciousness. And so all these clips from America's Next Top Model popped up where Tyra Banks was being like fat phobic or, you know, saying things that would absolutely not fly today, right? And I think for a lot of us, it had us shook because we were like, wow, I was watching this and I never questioned it at the time, right? I never thought that this was an issue, but now we have the language for that, right? Now we've had the public conversations online, in classrooms, informally to know, oh, this is wrong, or this is offensive to this group. This hurts this group in that way. So I don't think it's about necessarily throwing away songs or artists. You know, we can still engage with the art that they produced with a critical eye. So if they're using homophobic language or offensive language, that, you know, we can still engage with it. And I think it's important to engage with the contradiction of what it means to love something that doesn't always love you back, right? And that's part of what it means to be human, is part of what it means to be a woman within a hip hop space, is part of what it means to be a queer person in a hip hop space, and not just in a hip hop space, in society, right? Like these are reflections of things, that norms, ideas that are permeating in society that show up in the music. So I think it's complicated. I think every person should have the right to say, I don't wanna listen to this. I don't wanna listen to this artist. This hurts me deeply and is painful. I also think people should be given the space to think through the history or the context of why an artist would use a particular word or use a particular term, and really try to get at how we can shift, right? How we can do better now. What does that mean now? And I don't think no artist is free from that, right? Every artist has to keep thinking about how they can change. I mean, I was just talking about a song that Megaran performed the last time that I performed with him. It was a song where he reflected on a kind of key part of his performance where everyone would dance to like the Apache song from like Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. And a Native American woman had shared that that was actually really painful to her, right? And he wrote a whole song reflecting on that moment and how it had shifted his thinking and his relationship to the erasure of Native and Indigenous peoples in this country. So I think artists can be reflective, and I actually really love to see that when somebody's like, I'm gonna engage with some stuff I said earlier and question myself, like I've grown. That to me is kind of an example that we can follow as people.
Dope. That is so dope. And it hit me too this week. No, go ahead.
I wanted to conclude on one thing because interesting things that you said, Samus. I wanted to say, so to conclude the question, do you think that we should put restrictions in the rap game of what words should be said or not said?
I don't know about restrictions because there's no, you know, there's not like a governing body of hip hop, you know, so there is the culture, which is sort of the governing body of hip hop, but that's the people, you know, like that's folks. So people can say what they want to say, but it's definitely within our right as consumers to say, I'm not going to support this. I'm going to, and I'm going to actually call out or speak to why this is so hurtful, why we should not be reinforcing this in our music. So I don't think anyone is in the business of telling people what they can and can't do, but we can respond to it if it is harmful. If that makes sense.
I agree. Restrictions can sometimes create martyrdom too and make martyrs out of people. Mm-hmm. Like this week, big in the news, there's a country star, Cam Wall, I forgot his name, mm-hmm. who had gotten caught, you know, calling people the N-word. Not that there's a good context, but obviously in the negative context. Mm-hmm. And so he got dropped from a lot of radio stations. He got dropped from a lot of places. Mm-hmm. And people argue about cancel culture. But the fact is that there are so many people that think he's a hero because mm-hmm. he's looking at Black people in that way and mm-hmm. calling them the N-word, that his sales didn't go down after being canceled. His sales went up this week. So when we look at restrictions, those kind of controversies might actually help an artist in the way that we're trying to actually subdue. So those things are... Those are things to look at too. Jada, I am so sorry. We went all the way around the world before we got to you. I apologize, my new homie Jada. Jada, what's your question for Samus?
Okay. So if you had a sandwich named after you, what would be in it?
Perfect, Jada. Okay. This is your first podcast with us and chef's kiss. Well done.
I know, literally chef's kiss. So I'm thinking about food now. Oh my God. Apologies if my stomach rumbles because I actually have not eaten a great lunch today. So what would be in my sandwich? Wow. Well, I'm in Philly, so it would be a Philly cheesesteak, but there is an Ethiopian spot right down the street from where I live. And they make a kind of like they use spices that are, I don't even know what the kind of spice is, but it's an Ethiopian cheesesteak. And it is like, when I think about it, I actually might go get it today now that I've been reminded, but that would be 100% my sandwich would just be a standard ooey gooey Philly cheesesteak with some Ethiopian spices in it. Great question.
Yo, I took my son to Pat's for the first time.
Oh yeah.
1 month ago. And he's into culinary now. And okay. He sat in the back seat giving it the worst review ever, saying this is store-bought cheese.
Speak on it. It's a scam. People say that it's you know, it's like has this legendary status, but
Pat's
you know.
Geno's are neither.
Neither Gojo, which is the Ethiopian spot that that makes those cheesesteaks I was just talking about.
Are you telling us to Gojo or is the name of it Gojo?
It's called Gojo. So go to Gojo.
Go to Gojo. All right. Word. Shout out for Gojo. I don't know if you know this, but one of our 10th graders here is working on his music game as well.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've heard of this. His name is Isaiah. Isaiah is up next for a question.
Yes, I had a chance to listen earlier today and I was really vibing. There was some Afro beats. I was like, okay, yes, come through.
So one of my favorite artists was vibing to one of my students. Is that a thing that's happening right now?
The thing that's happening, yes.
Isaiah, how do you feel about this? What's your question?
Hi.
Hi.
My question for you is, how do you feel about Drizzy Drake?
Drake, oh my God, the most controversial. Drake!
We argue about this every week.
I argue about this every week with myself. But, okay, let me think how I feel about Drake. I think Drake is a great rapper. I think he is a great rapper. I really do. I think I initially kind of played him off because I wasn't super into, I felt like he was always whining about the same thing. Like, oh my God, women love me so much. Oh, my life is so hard, you know? And I was like, I cannot relate to this. I need to keep it moving. But when I actually listened to like his punchlines, the ways that he, like his flow, the kind of technical elements that I would think about as a rapper, I think he's actually a very, very, I appreciate his delivery. I like how he frames things. He's very funny. And he's very humorous. So, you know, I enjoy listening to Drake. I don't seek out Drake, mostly because I'm not super into what he's talking about, but I think he's a great rapper and he deserves to be like in the canon. Like, I think when folks look back at great rappers, I want to see his face up there as much as Aubrey kind of irritates me sometimes with what he says and how he has to say it.
If somebody asks you who you think are great rappers, who do you think are great rappers?
So great rap, a lot of the great rappers, or the rappers that I like the most, are people who are kind of like almost immediately in my circle, like folks who are in my orbit that I've performed with or toured with, mostly because I've really gotten to see them in their element, like in both on stage and, you know, on wax. So obviously I would put Mega Ran in there. I think he's so prolific. Like his body of work is so vast and he can talk about anything and do it in an interesting way. There's a rapper named Open Mike Eagle that I really, really love a lot. I love him so much because he's really helped me as an artist. He had a show on Comedy Central last year, in 2019, and I was able to be a part of that. He invited me into the space to do a song with him. So I like him because he's just weird. Like, he's weird and he leans into his awkwardness. He leans into his introspection, and the scenarios he comes up with in his songs are the kinds of things that me, as somebody with anxiety, that I also kind of get worked up about. So of course, MF Doom. And of course, I would have to put, I really like Odyssey and Homeboy.
Odyssey, Canyon. Also from Philly. And if y'all don't know Odyssey, because a lot of people don't know Odyssey, like, just check out his track, Like Really, right? Like, is it called Like Really? Like, and that can be an on-ramp. This dude is amazing.
Brilliant.
This dude is
multi-talented. Homeboy Sandman is another great rapper that I love from New York.
You know, last week was dedicated not only to Isaiah, but also MF Doom. Like, there was, I almost got into tears talking about MF Doom and what he meant to me and blah, 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 because MF Doom was a big one for me. That was a big deal. Elijah, what do you got for a question?
Okay, it's a very important question. Might be slightly boring in comparison, but if you were to theoretically write a book, what would it be about?
Elijah is our in-house writer.
Oh, cool. Well, that's not a boring question at all. My husband is a writer, so I actually think a lot about, I've been around writing, and I got my PhD, so I had to write a dissertation, which is kind of like a first draft of a book. So I think there's two things I would want to write about. The first is something similar to the book that Roberto mentioned by our friend, mutual friend Mega Ran, which is kind of like a life story, just how to get from point A to point B. Because there are a lot of different pieces of my life that people have questions about, like, how did you get a PhD and then also become a rapper? And now you're working on a video game project, and like, where do games fit in? So there are all these like pieces of my life that I feel like folks have questions for me about a lot that I would want to kind of flesh out. The other thing is I might want to turn my dissertation into a book. So that project was about community recording studios and kind of spaces where kids and young adults can enter into recording studios. And what are the kind of tensions that emerge in a space like that when you're trying to make it equitable and a space that really serves a community? So if I ever, you know, get the time, I would love to work on that book. And then maybe like 10, 15 years down the road, more of a memoir type kind of thing. But that's a really, really great question. Thank you, Elijah.
That was a great question. I had read on your wiki, only in preparation for this week, that you and I had similar entry points, right? Like, obviously we love video games. Yeah. And Billy's probably gonna ask you about video games when we get to Billy. But being somebody who loved video games and as a sound engineer, growing up DJing, all that stuff, mm-hmm. The last thing I ever wanted to do, and I got paid off of weddings, but I hated mm-hmm. it. I did not want to play Macarena ever again.
Oh my God, I can't imagine, yeah.
Ever, right? Like I'm traumatized by this song because I had to play it so much. And y'all should know, and people trying to get into the industry, right? Like there's a trap, like people want from you the hits. People want from you what they expect from you. When yeah. that might not necessarily be where your heart has grown to be in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Where my heart grew to be was the video games, right? Like I loved the sounds and Sony's music generator, right?
Yes.
Like
MTV music generator. Yep.
It was that. It was taking my sampler and recording different beats from Killer Instinct yes. and different like intros and stuff and putting that into the songs. Ain't nobody want to hear that when I'm DJing a wedding. I don't care.
Right.
I don't care. That's where I'm putting stuff in. Yo, I invented nerdcore and I didn't even if I knew that you were going to take the torch and go wild with it, I would have stayed in the game. I love the work that I'm doing with the students. Yes. But man, so MTV's music generator, this is a video game, by the way, everybody, similar to this year's Fuser.
Oh, yeah.
And other things that allow you to play with. Tell us about MTV's music generator and how did you use it?
Yeah, so it's an ancient PlayStation game. and basically it was like, I don't know how many of you have used digital audio workstations, DAWs, like maybe Reason, GarageBand might be familiar to some of y'all, but basically it's like a music composition software, but it was in kind of game form. So they gave you a whole bunch of samples you could make songs based on the samples they gave. You could also, I see folks quoting me in the chat, and that's got me so hyped, but and so you could also create your own original melodies and beats using the instruments. And so I started off with just using the samples that they had. And then I started to make my original like own kind of compositions. And you can make these kind of very crappy music videos with this like floating character. But that was one of the first spaces where I was like, yo, I'm making music, because I was not formally musically trained. So I was just doing it based off of like what sounded good and what felt good. And now I've learned so many other people were using this game. I had no idea that it was as popular as it was. And a lot of people got their, got into the game through MTV Music Generator. I feel like, do you know the rapper Dizzy Rascal? He's like a UK rapper with a very distinctive voice, but I was listening to him a lot in high school and he was using MTV Music Generator for some of his beats. So it really spawned a whole generation probably.
Back in college, I was talking to Word Burglar about G.I. Joe, just off of some random connection that somebody made because we both made music. And yeah. Who knew? Because this dude is still carrying the torch. Word Burglar, if y'all don't know, and y'all want to listen to some nerd jams, Word Burglar does it. I'm going to ask you in a little bit, Samus, I'm going to Argelis next, but I definitely want to come back and take the conversation from nerdcore rapper to Afrofuturist and talk about what that difference is. But Argelis, what's your question?
My question for you is, growing up, did you have any unsung heroes to you?
Oh, wow. That's a really powerful question. Definitely. I actually ended up making a song about this person, but Dr. Mae Jemison, she's the first woman of color ever in outer space and to traverse into outer space. And I just, everything about her story was incredible to me, in part because it was like she was a real life superhero. Like she had actually been into outer space. All these characters that I was playing and all of these dreams that I was having about, you know, a universe that I was making in my own head, she was actually living that life. And so it was just, you know, thinking about her, and I had the chance to meet her as an adult. And I, of course, broke down and was crying like a little baby. But she's just so incredible to me, her story to be able to leave Earth, one of the few humans who has left Earth, you know, and she's a Black woman, and it just really inspired me. And of course, I would say my older brother too. So he's a self-taught guitarist. I don't know if y'all have heard of the band Gym Class Heroes, but he is, he's a guitarist in Gym Class Heroes. And he taught himself.
Are they still together? It's been a while since I've heard from Gym Class Heroes.
Yeah, they do like, I think like one-off dates and like tour stuff. So I went to see them perform in Philly a few years ago.
Hold up, so you're a fan of your brother.
So much I'm a love, fan of my that's brother, so beautiful. Yeah.
Here we go, Love and Hip Hop Month with Steambox. Yo, yes. That's so dope.
All love, he totally inspired me because going back to what you said about Mighty Morphin, like he grew up and was like, I'm going to play the guitar. I'm going to play rock music. I'm going to play whatever. And there are no limits to the genre that I can be within, that I can play within. And to me, that allowed me to listen to whatever and be influenced by whatever. So yeah, he's definitely, I think, the reason. And he played a lot of games. So directly kind of making that connection with me. Thank you for that question. It was great.
Calvin, I'm coming to you in just a second. I want to actually do a whole podcast one day on how you met your heroes going to space and stuff like this. I need to learn this. Also, sure. Steambox sent this device to space to take a beautiful picture of the Earth. This was the two students in this project were ready to drop out of school when they did this, right? Like when they got involved with Steambox, ended up doing this project, and then they got into like Worcester Polytech and stuff. Wow. I need you as a consultant on this project because you have like close proximity to space people. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
Nope. Calvin next. I might've put it wrong in the thing. I'm going to Calvin. Calvin, if you're not ready, that's cool. Let me know what's up.
No, I'm ready.
All right.
What do you think about this generation's music?
What do I think about this generation's music? Let me see. I think one thing that I love about this generation musically is that y'all seem so unbothered with genre and like the kind of tyranny, the pressure of genre, which I think is something that a lot of folks from my generation and before have struggled quite a bit with. Like if you have a sound that fits a lot, it has a lot of different places it's pulling from, people will often say, well, where does this fall? What is this? I don't get this. But I'll listen to, you know, hip hop songs now and hear inflections of like emo music, or, you know, I'm hearing trap drums come out in all of these different other spaces where they didn't necessarily exist a few years ago. So I think something that this generation does really well is embrace your influences and try to figure out how you can marry them together and make them and audiences are less judgmental about that kind of thing. They're less like, this needs to fit in this box. This is not quite pop, so I'm not going to engage. I think you're more willing to do that. That said, you know, I would be lying if I didn't say I have a very specific, like, deep love of the folks within my generation, right? I think every generation is like that, that the stuff that came out when they were doing their thing to them is always going to be the best. So I think those rappers, those artists that I listened to probably, you know, 2000 through 2010, 15, like the albums in that span is where I'm the most like excited, I think. But yeah, I absolutely love the creativity in this moment. Like y'all are so resourceful and will make music and the last thing I'll say is I appreciate the self-reflectiveness of artists in this generation. So things like talking about mental health, that was not really reflected in a lot of you know, hip hop artists earlier. And I listened back to Biggie and you know, you listen to some of his work and it's like, this dude was going through it. He's talking about depression. He's speaking very candidly about wanting to die, right? Like these are very deep, heavy themes that he's wrestling with, but it's not framed in that way. Like we maybe didn't have the language for it or to understand it in that way. And I think now the artists of this moment have a different relationship with how we express pain and sadness, especially, you know, in terms of masculinity. So that's really promising and exciting to me.
Logic took it to another level with that anxiety track in mm-hmm. itself, right? Like, because he's not going around the bush, like he's specifically addressing it.
Yeah.
And that was in a way that brought a lot of attention to it. I wanna quickly ask for forgiveness because I was one of those people that talked about how my generation was so dope, like Rakim and Nas and all these people, mm-hmm. right? Like in Black Thought. And it's true. But the thing is, if I'm looking at this generation, who I'm looking at are the people in the limelight and hogging the limelight. Mm-hmm. And what's in fact happening is behind that limelight, there's so many dope artists out there right now who are killing it, right? Like who are absolutely destroying it. When you were talking about messaging and addressing things head on, I started thinking about J. Cole in 1985 and like how that was even received by his target, right? Like so dope. But if you look at our generation and my generation, because I'm a little bit older, if you look at my generation, and you look at the MCs that I'm talking about, they weren't in the front neither. It was MC Hammer in the front and Vanilla mm-hmm. Ice in the front. These are cornballs, right? So my generation should not look at your generation and be like, yo, these are cornballs, because y'all got that real work happening behind the scenes. Like right. We had that real work behind the scenes. Yeah. So I appreciate that. And that was a good question. I'm going to Billy and then Cameron. I appreciate Cameron waiting. Billy, you might remember from Penny Arcade Expo. Billy, say what's up.
Hi.
Hi, Billy.
Hi. I forgot my question at first, but now I remember it. Thank God.
Thank you for alerting us all to the fact that you'd forgotten your question. No better way to spend podcast time.
Okay. It was, have you ever gotten hate for bringing in the Afro culture to your music?
That's a really good question. I have actually not received a whole bunch of hate. And I want to talk about this in a few different ways. And I think that that's a really powerful question because it's the risk, I think, that a lot of Black and Brown artists face when they enter into geek spaces and when they decide, I'm going to change something or I want to shift this narrative. So when I was first deciding that I wanted to be an artist and I was thinking about names, and the name Samus felt really cool to me because I had loved the video game Metroid, and her story kind of spoke to me as like this intergalactic bounty hunter. I was like, I'm going to pick this name, but I was so scared of picking that name because I felt like all of the, you know, fanboys were going to be really angry that me, a Black woman, had chosen, you know, if you look at images of Samus from Super Nintendo on, she's kind of like a blonde white lady, right? And so me taking that on and informing her character with my likeness and my story, I felt like I was going to receive a lot of hate. And so I was really cautious at first. I even pronounced Samus differently so people wouldn't know, because I was so terrified that it was going to end up on the wrong
edit. How did you pronounce Samus?
I pronounced it Samus so that people would be like, maybe it's different. Like I was so anxious, and eventually I had to just
hold up. To differentiate yourself from Samus. So yeah. To make it different, you called it same? you called it like what?
It was, you can see how crazy making it was. So eventually it was like, yo, I just need to own this and be in the space. And for that, I have to thank people like Mega Ran and Jean Grey, artists who had created space within these geek universes for MF Doom and other artists who had really engaged deeply with sort of geek iconography and like created that lane, I think, that I was able to move within. And the other thing is, like, when people, you cannot like how I sound, but you cannot dispute that I'm a dope MC. That you cannot dispute. So it's like, I feel like anybody who would have anything to say, if you listen to me, you can be like, oh, I don't like how she sounds or what she's talking about, but there's nothing else really that you can say. You know what I mean? And I'm generally a very not cocky rapper. I'm like, so I'm always the one who's like, oh my God, does this sound good? I don't know. But in that regard, I know I am very smart. I know that my lyrics are very, very smart because I spend a lot of time constructing them and making sure those punchlines make sense and that the bars are delivered in a particular way. So no one can really challenge the merits of the work. And I found that you know, has really insulated me in a way. So it's actually been really cool because a lot of people who have never heard of people like Mae Jemison or other folks that I reference, they love Metroid. They'll listen to me and then they'll be like, yo, now I want to discover who are these people that she's talking about. And people who are into Black feminist thought who never touched a video game, they'll listen to me and be like, what is this Metroid thing? Like, let me check that out. So it's been this cool space for people to like discover how big that universe is. But I really appreciate that question because that's not the reality for a lot of Black and Brown artists. They do receive a lot of hate and it can be a really toxic, dangerous space for us to exist. And I hope I can create more space for women and girls and non-binary folks. And
I looked at the depth of this question too, and it was coming from Billy, right? It was coming from our student Billy, who mm-hmm. earlier, while we were talking about your lyrics, Don't Enunciate or You're an Oreo, like mm-hmm. Billy in the chat was relating so hard to those yeah. lyrics, right? So so yeah, like that was a deep-rooted question. I really appreciate that. Cameron, sorry, we have kept you in the wings forever. Cameron, what's your question?
It's okay. My question is, what is the big picture? I mean, not big picture. The big idea that you want people to get from your music?
Wow, that's like a TED Talk question. What is the big idea? Wow. I think if it's anything, it's that there is complexity to be found everywhere. And I think that that's something that's really important to me because, and part of why the character that I've tried to create through Samus is one who's always drawing from all these different corners of the universe. So like you'll be listening and it's a Simpsons reference. And then we're leaping over here to philosophy of science. And now we're down here and we're talking about, you know, Black feminist thought. And now we're up here and we're talking about what I'm going to eat for lunch today. And so it's like, I want to reflect all of the different ways that, you know, the spaces that I'm triangulating between, and in doing that, be a reflection of what it means to be human. Like we all have such deep stories. Every single person in this chat, every single person listening could speak for years and years and years about the experiences they've been through. And so I think for me, operating in this universe that I'm in, it's to try to get people to see the complexity around them, that behind every lyric, behind every person, behind every song, there's a whole universe and you cannot judge a book by its cover. I don't know if that works, but that was such a good question.
You can't judge a book by its cover. Didn't you reference, you referenced a book in one of your, as your favorite book growing up.
A Wrinkle in Time.
A Wrinkle in Time was my favorite book.
Yes.
Yeah. Yo, I think, hold up. I want to capitalize on something you just said. Good question, Cameron. I really appreciate that. And for all the future aspiring people working in music or any art form, like what she was just talking about was the difference between art and product. I know we talked about it a little bit with Chachi, but there is a difference, right? Like if you're making something to put out and make money, that's a product, right? That's like you can make a table and you put it out and make money. But if you are making something that's reflecting your life, right? That's art, right? Whether you make money on it or not, that's art. That's the difference between art and product. And I hope that y'all can take that because that's the integrity of your work. Now, mm-hmm. if your work is to make a good product and make, you know, that's a different thing and that's on you and good for you. And one of the people that's right down the line, and again, we don't have time for this, but I would love to explore Jay-Z critically with you, mm-hmm. because Jay-Z walks that line hard, right? Because yeah. I've seen such dope art out of Jay-Z, but yeah. I've seen also just stuff that's straight product. Like if you are sitting at the piano waiting to write a new song and you go, boom, boom, Jigga, boom, boom, what's my name?
Right.
like that's product. That's not like, what is that reflecting? That ain't reflect, you ain't saying shit, right?
Right.
But he knows how to make money and he knows how to tell his story. So that's a fine line. That's a whole nother thing. I apologize. I'm pulling on threads that I can't even explore right now. Matthias has been waiting in the wings. Matthias is our last student here. To be able to ask you a question. And then if anybody has any other pressing questions, we could get into that too. But Matthias was referencing 1080p earlier.
I know. I was like,
And 1080p, was that the track that you had your mom?
Yeah, the voicemail from my mom, yeah.
How did that happen? And then Matthias, I'm gonna get into your question. Like, your mom left you a voicemail and you incorporated it?
Yeah, so that voicemail was left on my, like all of the stuff in the song I was going through, like I was going through it. And so I, you know, she had left me this voicemail right at the tail end of this really deep, dark period that I had been in, where she was just kind of trying to see how I was doing. And in that space, I felt like this song doesn't need a chorus. I can't actually put a chorus in here because it doesn't make sense conceptually, but there's this space, there has to be a gap between the first verse, which is when I'm in the darkness, and the second verse, which is when I'm crawling up for air. And it felt like that was the best way to show this transition, was to have my mother's voice, like, you know, or sorry, to just have my mom be a part of the experience.
It was beautiful. It was personal. And that's how your audience can connect with you. You know what I mean? Through moments like that. And it apparently hit Matthias too. Matthias, what's your question?
Hello.
Hi.
My question is, well, I got two questions, but I'm gonna just say one, but how would you describe the type of music that you make?
I love that question so much because it's like the difficult one for all artists, right? We all think we're doing a million things and then the audience will say, no, you're this, which is kind of what happened to me. Cause I was making, you know, when I first started out, I didn't know what nerdcore was. I had no idea that there was a genre of folks who were committed to kind of geek fandoms and incorporating that into their music. So I thought I had, like, just like you, Roberto, I thought I had engineered a whole new genre. I was like, wow, look at me. Like, nope, literally nobody else has ever done this before. And then Mega Ran sends me an email the next day and is like, hi, I think we do the same thing. So suddenly he opened up my eyes to this whole scene. But I took on the label of Afrofuturism, which some of you might have heard of, as kind of like an aesthetic and political.
What does that mean?
So it's school of thought is the best way to put it, but it's definitely a particular aesthetic that came out of like sci-fi and science fiction, speculative fiction in the 90s. And this realization that there was this aesthetic of Black folks in future spaces or in spaces where we had always been told we would never appear, right? So people were writing, Black authors, Black illustrators, artists, you know, musicians were putting Black people into future worlds in a way that we had never been reflected before. And so like, if you know Janelle Monáe, she's a great example. Black Panther is kind of the quintessential example at this moment of what Afrofuturism looks like. And so, yeah, exactly, Black Panther. So I would think of like my video game work, I would call that Afrofuturist because it's so tied up with my identity as a Black woman. And like the geek, my love of video games is all seen through the lens of Black experience. And so that's why I use that term in addition to, alongside, instead of nerdcore. But the rest of it, I would just call it Black girl nerd rap.
Afrofuturist, yes. Black girl nerd rap. Matthias, this is your first podcast with us. Lightning round. What's your second question?
My second question is, who do you felt made like feel made like more of an impact than like the old school rap game, Tupac or Biggie?
Oh, really?
We on the East Coast.
I know. I was like, it's lightning round. You know what? I'm going to say Biggie just because I've listened to Biggie more. And I brought up Biggie before as someone who I think was wrestling with some, I mean, both of them were wrestling with a lot of demons in their work that I think is in a powerful way. But I'm going to go with Biggie because I just listened to Biggie more, being on the East Coast.
It was all a dream. Can you, please forgive anybody who's jumping off real quick because they some of them are going to other classes. If you can stick around, we're going to wrap this up really quickly. I hate that I'm sandwiching this in at the end. It deserves a lot more, but please tell us about the Women's Hip Hop Archive.
Yes. So the Keeper Digital Archive is a project that I am part of. I'm part of a collective. And we're basically trying to create the first comprehensive digital archive that maps the contributions of women and girls in hip hop over the past 50 years. And we're in the process right now of working with some folks who can create a back end for that because it's a tremendous labor to try to even categorize, catalog all of the various works. I mean, the labels, the music videos, and even thinking about who would be included in a space like this is something we're working through now because there are people, you know, the culture is large and there are so many different people who intersect with it who aren't necessarily artists. So we are really in the process of building out the back end and over the next year are hoping to kind of create a landing page and then surface things out. But I'm really, really excited. Go to followthekeepers.com and you'll see more information about it.
Followthekeepers.com. I appreciate the work that you're doing. Where can we follow you and learn more about you? You and your husband have a podcast, right? You mentioned it earlier.
Yes.
Where do we find that?
So if you go to Enongo, Enongo-LK.com, all of my, everything that I do is there. So you could just music.
Government.
Podcast. I know that's my like professional like kind of resume. If I need to get a job, like let me send this to people's site.
Thank you. And where do we find your music? And where do I find new music? Because it's been a minute.
Yeah, so it's samusmusic.com, SAMMUSmusic.com. And I'm working on new music. I've been tied up. I'm working on a rap video game with some friends. And so that's where a lot of my energy has been.
Okay, so I'm losing students, and I understand that they've got to go to the next class. We would be doing a complete disservice to our audience if you did not expand on this music video game. How much can you tell us about
this? So we're working on this game for Insecure, the series from HBO, and as many of you know, in that series, Issa Rae raps in the mirror.
Wait, start all over again, because Insecure is on its last season, and Insecure is going to wrap up with Samus?
It will be wrapping up with this game that I'm blessed to be a part of. And it's really, the whole story is kind of trippy. I'll tell you about it whenever we have a chance, because it's like, how did this even happen? But so there's a kind of free to play game that we're putting out into the universe, mobile game. And in it, you are able to rap in the mirror. And so I was brought in as like the rap consultant to kind of help figure out what does this thing look like and how can people, you know, really engage with this very critical part of Insecure.
Oh, Issa's character is often rapping in the mirror about her. And again, her life is very similar to our similarities, right? Like we both working in education and with young people, like that whole nonprofit stuff, I walk in those shoes.
Exactly.
Right? I walk, like I could relate hard to some of that stuff. So she raps in the mirror and we're talking about a video game developed around that concept?
That it incorporates that. So it's like storyline and there's rap. And so they both allow you to move forward through the narrative. So I've been putting a lot of work into that, but I'm hoping to work on my next album as well. I really want to do a lot this year since last year was such a fever dream. So, you know, we'll see. I hope that by the end of the year, I'll have a lot of stuff to show for it.
Are you coming back to Providence? Are you coming back to Brown?
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be there in July. I have just been in Philly since I've been teaching remotely, but I'm going to be in Providence for real, me and my husband in July.
I drink, you know, I do milkshakes. I don't do beers, but your first beer, milkshake, whatever it is for you and your husband is on me.
Oh, thank you. I can't wait
to connect and connect our students to what you're doing. And please, if there's any way that me and my nerds can help y'all out, you know that we got you. Thank you, everybody who's listening to the podcast. This has been Steambox at Highlander with the amazing, legendary Samus, Afrofuturist of the hip hop world. Please check her music out at samusmusic.com. Check out her, especially the Keepers Project, which seems amazing to me because there's so many amazing women who've kind of created a path into hip hop when hip hop world wasn't the nicest to women at that time. So yeah, check out all of this work. Thank you everybody for listening. This is Roberto Gonzalez with the Steambox Podcast. See you guys next week.
Bye.